The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to IMC. Those of you who are here and those of you online, welcome. And I hope it was nice for you to sit for the 45 minutes in quiet. That's how we used to do it here on Monday nights for years, for over 30 years. But then with the pandemic, when you started doing online, we started doing the guided meditations. And when I sat down to meditate, I thought it was so nice and quiet in here. I didn't want to disturb it with words. So I don't feel like I have a lot to say today, but what I have to say I think is important. So we'll see where it goes. Maybe we'll have some discussion. And that is, I'll start with, there's a very famous story, or not a story exactly, but a teaching from a Thai monk meditation teacher named Ajahn Chah. Teacher of many people here in the West. And he said something like, if you let go a little, you'll have a little peace. If you let go a middling, you'll have a middling peace. And if you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of peace. And so the emphasis is on letting go. And many people do associate Buddhism and Buddhist practice with letting go. And there's a lot of wonderful words, associated words, like there's relinquishment. Some people sometimes talk about renunciation. And what's interesting, if you look at the teachings of the Buddha about relinquishment or letting go, it's generally not about relinquishing anything, but rather it's relinquishing the grip, the holding. So it's releasing the clinging. We're not necessarily releasing or letting go of the things of our life. Now, some of us might be doing things which are unhealthy, and it's good to let go of things which are unhealthy, unethical, unwise. But for the Buddha, I think he was just assuming people who are doing this practice are living an ethical life. And so the focus was letting go of the clinging, the grasping. And what I'm about to say next is one of the reasons I wanted to, the thing I most wanted to emphasize. It's possible to hold on to something tight. You hold on to it. So if you hold on tight, it might be useful in the wind to hold on to your umbrella tight. But if you do it all the time, even when it's not windy, and you have it really attached to that umbrella, eventually your hands might get all knotted up or start cramping up, or you can't do a lot of other things with your hand. So it's nice to not be attached to umbrellas and put them down when it's not raining and leave them at home. And so we learn to let go or release we're not holding on so much anymore. But there's, in English we can say that once you're not holding on anymore, it doesn't mean that you've dropped something, no longer have it. It can mean you still can hold it without holding on. You can have your open hand open, and you can hold something freely and openly in the hand. And that's a world of difference. You don't have to let go of something, give it up, but can you hold it lightly, loosely, just holding it, bearing it this way with an open hand? So if you were holding onto a little bird, it would probably fly away. That's what birds do. But if I'm holding onto the striker, it's not going to fly away, but maybe one of you has a really good use for this and asks me for it. It's really easy then. It's almost like this is holding it this way is almost like an offering. Here, take it. Holding it like this, it's almost like a fist. That makes a very different impression. So what I'm proposing is that we can learn to let go of the grip and then hold the things in our life, the people in our life, loosely, lightly, without any restrictions on anything, without holding tight to anything. And then things will take their course. Things will unfold. If it's a bird, it'll fly away. If someone wants a striker, maybe you're ready to give it. If something needs to be comforted, well, it's nice and warm and soft in the palm of the hand. So you're there. But we're not limiting anything. We're not saying you can't go away. And we're not saying you have to stay here. But you are welcome to stay here. I'm available here. So what ways do we hold on rather than simply hold? One of the ways we hold on is we identify with it. This is mine. This is mine, so it's my striker, so you can't have it. It's my whatever, so you know I have to protect it. Maybe it's appropriate sometimes to protect your umbrella if it's raining on you but not on someone else. You know, it's a very narrow little rainstorm. When I was in Hawaii, they had very local rainstorms. But what about living a life that somehow holds everything lightly, holds everything without restriction, holds everything without keeping it trapped in the fist of our clinging, our grasping, our holding on? Is it appropriate? What happens if we go around with an open hand always? Pick things up, we hold it in an open hand. We're offered something, we hold it with an open hand. Someone wants it, we offer it. Many years ago, I was spending time with a monk named Ajahn Amaro, an Englishman who was an abbot of a Theravada monastery here in Northern California. This must have been the very early 2000s. I don't know exactly when it was, but he had a cell phone that was maybe a smartphone before there were smartphones. You know, before we had that name, he had this. It did all this stuff. I think he could do email or something, but it did all this stuff. That he was amazing what he could do. And it cost something like $1,000. And so I said to him, "What are you, a monk, doing with this big, expensive, fancy phone? Aren't you supposed to be a renunciant?" And he said, "Oh, someone gave it to me. And I figured it was okay to have it. If anybody who asked me for it, I would give it to them." So I thought about it. Not so much that I wanted the phone, but I wanted to test him. I wanted to find out, is this for real? But I didn't. But this, you know, he was holding it. I think he was probably genuine. He was holding it this way. He was holding it loosely. What about someone you're in conflict with? What if someone's angry with you, you're angry with them? So then the gesture might be, you know, like this: stay away, go. But what about if you go like that, also with a person who you're angry with? Don't push them away, but like here. What does it mean to hold someone who's angry with you or you're in conflict with this way? If you hold them this way, hold on to something, then it's not very friendly. But with an open hand, the gesture of fearlessness in Buddhism is to people have nothing to fear from you. Is to hold your hands up like this, flat, no weapon, just flat and open. So this idea of the open hand, open mind, open heart. So it doesn't mean that we have to give everything up. Unless maybe they ask you for it. Maybe. Who knows what you'll want to do. But it doesn't mean you have to give things up. But in the Dharma, what we're learning to do is something different. We're learning to not hold on. Hold, but don't hold on. If it's appropriate to hold, hold it, but don't hold on. Because holding on prevents the natural flow of things to happen. Things come, things go. This is the Zen master in San Francisco who started the San Francisco Zen Center, Shinryo Suzuki Roshi. He said, renunciation is allowing things to go when it's their time. When things go, when things have time to go, then we let go. So it's like he was quite happy to hold, but when it was time to go, then the renunciation was letting it go. I think parents have to learn that at some age. Sometimes the kids are ready to leave before the parents are ready for them to leave. In all kinds of stages. Okay, you have to go. You have to go. I remember when my son was, I don't know, he was maybe 5. And he came out of the bathroom dressed like a 1970s disco king. I couldn't believe what I saw. I mean, where did he find those clothes? And where did he... And he figured out how to slick his hair. And it was like... he had some kind of gold necklace. I don't know, you know, what in our house? What did he find? And I looked at him, and I thought, okay. I mean, this was like represented something which I don't stand for. It just was so different than anything that I could, you know, appreciate, really, whatever it was. And I looked at him and said, well, this is what he's done. Who am I to say that he shouldn't do that? Just because I don't have a good association with that. It's not my place to tell him that he can't dress up this way and to figure it out. So I keep my hand open, and he's going. Who knows what direction he's going to go in his life? But, you know, he gave it at 5. He's making choices, and, you know, it's not my place to shape him in every possible way. Parents have a role, of course, but you know, it was a moment of like, oh, okay, I have to let him go in certain ways. So this freedom of the open hand, but is that a freedom that you're comfortable with? Do you feel safe, or do you feel like you lose too much? Or you feel safer and more comfortable holding on, gripping? No, not that. It's fine for Gil to say that, but he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand what life is about. The challenges, and I have to keep my things so I'm safe, and it goes on in all the justification. But is it really? What are we trusting? What are we not trusting? We're not being asked to let go of anything. We're asked just to hold it with an open heart, open mind, open hand. And care for it. I love this gesture. I mean, I think when you put two hands together like this and hold things, then it's really supportive. I love this as a metaphor for mindfulness. That we take our attention and come from underneath our sadness, our anger, our fear, and just hold it like this. But again, it's open, so it can go if it wants. I'm not holding on to it, not resisting it. So just hold everything. And maybe if it's time for it to go, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's okay because the biggest gift we have, the biggest treasure we have, is the open hand, is the open heart, is that freedom. To lose that by clenching, from a Buddhist point of view, is impoverishment. Even if I think that it's so important to keep the striker, the fact that I'm gripping it is a kind of poverty. If I hold it like this, it's a kind of a wealth. If I hold it like that, and it goes away, I still have the wealth, the freedom. So holding, but not holding on. I think it's a very respectful way to live a life. It's kind of like the middle way. The middle way between clinging and throwing things away. Clinging and letting go of things. The middle way between accumulating and getting rid of things. Just hold it like this. And things come and go. People come and go. Things come and go. All kinds of things come and go in that openness. And maybe it's a phenomenal form of respect, reverence, care, generosity to hold other people in that open hand. To hold on to other people maybe is not respecting them. To discard people is disrespectful. But that middle way, hold but don't hold on. Hold but don't discard. So that's the thing that I wanted to say today. What do you think of that? Do you have any comments about that? Testimonials? Protests? Questions?
Hi, it's Nancy. I have some possessions. I have some possessions.
Yes.
That are very dear and nostalgic for me. And I realized that when I pass away, my nieces and nephews have no interest in them whatsoever, even though they're family heirlooms. And so I've been thinking about it lately, about what do I do about these treasured things that are so dear to me? And how do I let those go when they're really going nowhere?
I don't have an answer to that, but what occurs to me is that in that open hand, you might figure out how to let go, how to give it, how to do something, but they represent something for you. And so what they represent is different than what the object is. And maybe if there's some way with the open hand to preserve, protect, stay close to what they represent in your heart, that will actually better allow these memories or whatever it is to live in you than the object. Maybe it's easier then to figure out a good home for the objects. And so maybe doing a ritual that maybe transfers the memories or the associations from the objects to your heart. What does that sound like?
Sounds good.
How do we adapt this way of thinking for our day-to-day life? Like, I think the idea is great, but I think just living life, it's kind of hard to understand when you are grasping to the object or idea, thought, whatever, etc., versus just keeping it open, as you've mentioned.
Yeah. I don't know, just I guess because it occurs an example happened recently to me that in the last months where I went to a restaurant and there was something strange about how the credit card payment worked and I didn't get any receipt. So I wondered about that. What's that about? Am I in trouble? Am I going to be charged a whole bunch, you know? And I wondered about it, and so I did check my credit card account online, but it didn't seem necessary. I didn't want to do the usual things I would have done years ago, which get anxious. Somebody going to take advantage of me. I was kind of like, okay, well, let's see what happens. And what happens if they charge me twice as much than they're supposed to? Do I need to get worried or upset or feel the injustice of that? And what should be my role? So I didn't have answers to those questions, but those questions existed with me feeling like this, very relaxed about it. Is that appropriate, or should I have gotten anxious? Should I have rushed back and said, hey, something's wrong here, I didn't get a receipt, and I don't know, you know, what's going on? I also didn't sign that little slip you're supposed to sign when you do credit cards. Like, well, what's this is unusual. What's going to happen now? So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what occurred to me. I think it's a very different way of living. In one point in my life, I would have referred to it as living a life of trust. But now I don't think of it as trust anymore. I just think of it as freedom.
Do you have any suggestions for if you feel like you're the one being grasped? Like the person being grasped.
Oh, if you're the person being grasped.
Yes.
Oh.
And maybe your family or your friends, and they sort of hurt you sometimes.
Yeah, what do you do then? Yeah. Ideally, in my world, ideally for me at least, is that you would have friends or that you can talk honestly with. And if you can't have an honest conversation, maybe that's to reevaluate the friendship. And an honest conversation would be maybe look like this. You know, I've noticed for some time now that, you know, you're really attached to me or grasping onto me, holding on. And we have a friendship and I value you, and I can imagine you have a need for companionship or need for something. But it's also hard for me. I feel limited and boxed in. I wonder if we can have a conversation about this and find a way together that works for both of us. So some kind of conversation like that. That would be my inclination. Because I put a tremendous value on honest communication. How does that sound?
That sounds good. That sounds helpful.
That's helpful?
Work. Yeah.
Yeah, good. It's hard. Not everyone wants to have that kind of honesty and communication. It's difficult for people. So for people who it's a foreign idea to have such open, frank conversations, you have to kind of come at it a little bit slowly and carefully and work into it rather than, like, let's sit down and be honest. But to be able to learn the skill of these kinds of conversations is one of the great things. This was my introduction to the spiritual life, was witnessing these kinds of conversations with people. I lived when I was 21 at the largest hippie commune in the United States. It was about 800 people. And then Tennessee, called The Farm. And it was, but it was a spiritual commune of sorts. But they had gotten their start in spirituality through LSD. But when they moved to Tennessee, LSD didn't work so, you know, taking LSD didn't work so much there. So they had to figure out something different, something as powerful as LSD. And the powerful thing they discovered was honesty. So when I went there and stayed for a while, I stayed there because I saw the amazing honesty between people who were there and how they worked all kinds of things out. And it was so inspiring to me. And because it was kind of a spiritual community, that was, I got a sense of, oh, no, spiritual life could be this way. And that inspired me.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. I've always believed in the honest communication. I think I need to slow my delivery.
Slow delivery.
Yeah, because communication is definitely...
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Your first examples of the beautiful imagery of an open hand were very clear to me. I believe the very first one you gave was an open hand with the striker, and that seemed very comfortable because that's a neutral object to me. I may have one, I may have two, I can get another one easily, so certainly I can do this, and it may leave my hand. And similarly with the bird, it wasn't neutral, but it was the nature of the object that I had. So it was the right thing to do, to open and let it go. But if something is so personal, not even high value, perhaps like Nancy, if I may refer to that, that this is such a treasure, an actual object of treasure, but something so emotional, like the anger you would feel with someone and the thought of opening up and expecting that to just leave. Certainly no one's going to take it from me. It's not very valuable to anyone else. But why is that feeling so different than the bird or the striker?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas? Because it's a very personal question, so I see if you have any for yourself.
It's just the intensity of the creation that it is from me. Uh-huh. But it seems to have high value. And it may be anger on one day, but it may also be something about my self-image or my uh-huh. something that, again, it just seems to be a... If it's so much about me.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a wonderful saying in Buddhism that I learned from Buddhism, that if there's a gap between the ideal and the actual, a gap between what we ideal about to be and what's actually going on, study the actual. So you've heard this teaching today, this ideas today, and now you're asking about how to do it when you have this intensity and so important for you and so valuable. Study why it's valuable. Maybe that means that you haven't really studied, you haven't really looked at yourself. What's really going on? Why is it valuable? What are you trying to do? What are you afraid of? And then so that way you find the answers to yourself, rather than that's where the answers come by. So if the ideal is to be like this, you can't do it in some areas of your life, that's okay, but that becomes where your practice goes. Then you discover something. I can't tell you what you'll discover, but something useful.
That's lovely, thank you.
I thought at the beginning when you were speaking that you're going to maybe ask something else, and that is, what if what I have is really valuable? And someone asks for it. What do I do then? I think that, like this bell and this striker, we've had it here for now almost 20 years. I remember very fondly the person who gave it to us was a gift. And who came to sat here and was sat in this room for years and all that. And so for me, I have this wonderful association. It's important, the connection to that person and all the years we've been here. And it has value. So if you came and said, I think I'd like that striker, I'd say, oh, Well, let me tell you a little bit before I give it to you. You know, this is not any old striker. This is actually has a lot of value because of the memories, associations, and kind of the background here. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm happy to give it to you, kind of happy enough. But what if I go buy you a striker, a different one? Would that be okay? Or I would just say, you know, I explain to you that yes, but this is what it means for me. And then you'd say, oh, that, I didn't know that. Okay, well, then I don't want it. Or many years ago, I had a Zen teacher. We were facing each other, and I asked him for a time to meet with him to talk about practice or something. And back then, people had date books. And so so his response to me facing him saying, you know, do you have time to meet with me? Was he came around shoulder to shoulder next to me and brought out his date book and put his date book between us so I could see his schedule. And it was like, he wasn't going to tell me, I can't meet you in the next week. You have to wait, you know. He said, let's look at this together. And then, oh, it's obvious. He can't meet with me right now. And it wasn't me versus him. It wasn't oppositional. Why doesn't he care for me? He's just, why is he putting me off 2 weeks? It was like, oh, it was done cooperatively. And this idea of doing things cooperatively, you know, letting people know what's happening for you. This is, striker is valuable. Do you still want it? Do you still want it? Something. So that, I thought that's where, that was the answer I was getting ready to tell you. you went someplace else.
I'll try to be more careful.
No, it was great. No, you don't have to. It was great what you said, what you asked.
Gil, I'm wondering if you can talk about letting go of one's self-identification with one's work or whatever one's doing. Uh-huh. Moving from a place of, like you said, identifying with the task to a place of aspiration.
So is this an identity that you keep like this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Or is it or does it kind of wane and wax through the week?
Probably wane and wax.
So what is it like when what are you like when it's most not there?
Open to more possibilities.
Uh-huh.
A little more relaxed.
So rather than, you could study the identification, but another thing you can study is study when it's least there, and see what you have to learn from that, and that might be enough.
Yeah,
that enough to change it and shift it.
Yeah, thank you. I'll try.
Hold it. Yeah, so it's horizontal. You're like, yeah.
Okay. What to say? Just it's a little off topic, but I haven't been here for a couple of years since COVID, and I really appreciate being here in this space, and I'm usually the one that doesn't speak, so I think for me, I've been holding my fear of not speaking, and it feels good to say what I said.
Oh, fantastic! So. And to describe your fear. That's here, so I hear that you're holding your fear, but not being held by your fear. To speak this way.
Yeah, that feels accurate.
You're practicing what I'm talking about already. that was beautiful. Thank you, very much. Come practice more often.
I will. Yes.
Okay, so thank you for being here this evening. This was very nice. And I still find it very lovely to be with people. And still, even though the serious part of the pandemic of really being isolated is kind of over, I'm still not actually spending a lot of time with people directly like the way I used to. And so anything like this I value, and I think it's wonderful to be together with people, practicing together. So I appreciate it, and thank you for being part of this, and I hope to see you again. I think I'm scheduled to come Mondays, maybe about once a month, and Diana probably 2 to 3 times a month or something, and other people will come through as well. But lovely to be here. Thank you.